Hello, it's Wayne Perry, the TV carpenter here. Can I ask you a question? Are you a DIY doer? Meaning, do you like DIY? Do you like fixing things in your home? Or does it frighten you and you'd rather somebody else did it, like your other half, or you paid somebody to come and do it? The reason I'm asking the question is, it's either one or the other. People don't realise anyone can be a DIY doer. And for me, when I say that, I don't mean the big jobs. I don't mean putting up shelves. I don't mean laying laminate flooring. For me, DIY is about having a safe house for you and your family. So when I say safe, knowing how the smoke alarm works and why does it beep, or knowing how to turn your water off if your house is flooding, or if the fuse trips and your electrics go out, knowing what all the buttons on the fuse board do. So that's a safe home. I think everyone should have that. Everyone should have a practical home, meaning everything should work as it should. So if your curtain tracks falls out the wall, you know how to put it on. Or if your toilet seat breaks, you know how to change it. But also, I think everyone should have a beautiful home, knowing what paint types to use, knowing how to upcycle some furniture. If you would like a safe, practical and beautiful home, let me teach you the DIY around it. All you need to do is join the DIY Doers Facebook group. You can find it on Facebook, or you can go to my website, thetvcarpenter.com, and I'll link you straight through to there. Let me help you create a safe, beautiful, and practical home for you and your family. On today's show, I'll be chatting with Linda Baronke. She's an award-winning interior designer who, up until recently, was the design director for Soho House, UK, Europe and Asia.
To be honest, quite scared of, if I join a big brand like this, will I just have to produce and reproduce the same idea over and over again? Because obviously they have a very strong aesthetic. But luckily the projects, you know, they were all very different, from the geographic location to the architectural details to the historic elements. And because we always work with local craftspeople as well, every single project features different design elements and different color schemes and finishes.
Hello and welcome to the TV Carpenter Podcast with me, your host, Wayne Perry. This is a podcast where I interview everyone from the world of interior design and garden makeover shows. Usually I've worked with them more than my friends, but the aim is really to empower you and encourage you to create your dream home. Now, last week I mentioned that there'd be a competition with my sponsor, Thorndown. Over the previous year, I've showcased how amazing Thorndown is, their eco paint, how it's run by a family-run business. And we just thought together, Caroline and Ben, the owners of Thorndown, and myself, thought this competition would be fun. So I don't know if any of you seen this social media guy, this TikTok guy called Christian Hull. He's really funny. And he was doing a whole TikTok series of him trying to guess paint colours as it was falling down from the machine into the tin. So you had to guess it before it got mixed up. And it's how Thorndown mix all of their paint. Everything's mixed bespoke and they can colour match everything. So we thought it'd be really good competition to run. But first, I just want to play you the clip of Christian Hull guessing. And this is what I want you guys to do as you're trying to guess the paint colour.
Are you losing your mind? It's just my TikTok is now just me guessing paint colours. It's just because this is the funnest game. A little yellow, a little white, a handful of blue, and a lot of red. So that would be the blue and the yellow would be like a dark green, a dark green and a lot of red. With a hint of white. So a light green with a hint. Would it be mauve? Would this make like a dark... Like it would be this. It would be like a dark mauve colour. Oh, I don't know. Now I'm really... it's got to be mauve. I'm just going to lighten it. I'm just going to go with a lighter mauve. Did it go into white paint or did it go into a gelatin? No, I'm changing my mind. Confident this went into white paint, so it should be a much lighter mauve. Oh, God, come on, give me this win, give me this win, give me this.
After listening to that, I hope that inspires you, and I want the same reactions from you. So what the plan is, we are going to be releasing a little video on my Instagram, The TV Carpenter, and Thorndown's Instagram on a Saturday at 10 o'clock a.m. And then it goes out. And then it's really easy. There's a paint drop, and then there's the Thorndown colour chart at the end of this short video, and you've got to name the paint colour. All you have to do is put it in the comments below, and then on a Wednesday we'll announce what the colour is, and we will choose a winner at random, and that winner will receive a 750ml tin of paint sent directly to them. There's a few T's and C's. If you're abroad, obviously you have to pay for postage and things like that, but the paint will be sent to you, and that'll be enough to do. You can choose any colour. You don't have to choose the colour that's being paint dropped. You get to choose whatever colour. You get a voucher for a free tin of paint, which means you can do a, you know, front door makeover. You could, you know, upcycle some furniture. But ultimately you get to, yeah, a free tin of paint. So look out for the video of the paint drop, which will go out live on Saturday at 10 a.m. And remember, even if you don't enter, you could still get 15% discount on any other online purchases. So if you want to try out the paint and you want that 15% discount, just go to thorndown.co.uk and type in the code TV Carpenter. So everyone's a winner. Now it's time for the main event. My first interior design guest of season 5 is a big hitter in the world of interior design. It is Linda Baronke. Now, Linda Baronke is a stunning interior designer. She's won awards. Her first award was Britain's Best Emerging Interior Designer back in 2008. And then she went on to work with the likes of Tom Dixon or Martin Bruditsky. And then she's worked all over the world. And the last 5 years, she's recently just left, but for the last 5 years, she was design director of Soho House. She was in charge of the UK arm, Europe and Asia. So, you know, she managed and looked after and developed beautiful interiors for the Soho House group. And it was great to chat with her. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. This is me chatting to Linda Baronke. Linda Baronke, thank you for coming on the TV Carpenter podcast.
Thank you for having me.
My first question is, you were design director for Soho House for about 5 years. Over that time, how many times did people ask for free or discount membership?
Oh, wow. Don't get me started. Of course, I mean, obviously, if they know that you're working at Soho House, even if you're an interior designer, they think that you have this ultimate power to give out free memberships. But yeah, I, you know, in times when I felt the people were right and they fit the membership profile, I obviously helped them. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of people from my friends are now members because I worked at Soho House for that period of time.
I was just chatting to my wife when I said I was interviewing you, and my wife works in the West End, and she was like, they're about to open a new West End store. She does musical theatre, like she's working at Drury Lane. She's like, oh, see if you can get membership. But I was like, I don't even know the lady yet. I haven't had a conversation. So it just messed me up because I knew that that would be one of the questions that so many people must have asked you over the time.
Well, let's see how this conversation goes, and then I can see what I can do.
Oh, fabulous. But this podcast is all about celebrating people's journeys, and you know, I've changed career, and a lot of, like we talked before, like Michelle Gundahin went from being an editor to, and went from being an architect to an editor of Elle Decoration. You were a very successful model traveling around the world. How did you go from modeling to interior designing? So how did it all start?
Oh, well, you know, ever since I was little, I wanted to be a fashion designer, in fact. When I was discovered as a model and was asked to travel to Paris and start working for this world-renowned agency called Ford Models, my backup plan was, you know, modeling, but number one was fashion design. So I thought this would be an amazing opportunity to go to Paris. I spoke the language. I've been studying French since I was 9. And ultimately, I wanted to be a fashion designer in Paris. So I thought this is a great excuse to go there, make some money on the side if it works out, and then enroll into a program and start my journey in fashion. But on the other side. I guess, you know, things didn't go that way because I guess luckily I was quite successful in modeling and I started traveling around the world. And, you know, whoever has any inclination with modeling or knows anyone who models, they know that it's a full-on job. You can't do anything on the side. You always have to be ready to go with a bag packed on the side, because you can get a call the night before that you're traveling to Costa Rica for 2 weeks and you have to be ready. So, you know, my idea of doing a bit of modeling and then studying on the side, it didn't quite go as planned. So yeah, 6 years later, until, you know, then I was traveling the world. I lived in Tokyo, in New York, in Sydney. You know, I guess my main point, my main goal with traveling, with modeling, was that I could go to all these places and live there, not just visit, but to live and breathe the city and explore and understand the culture. And that was something that was so intriguing for me, and I learned so much from it. So I thought, as long as I can travel to all these places and I still have cities on my bucket list, I won't stop modeling. But once I've done them all, I will, and then I will start my studies. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you know, working in fashion is so full on, and I realized it doesn't really fit my personality, but I still wanted to do something creative, to work with colors, to work with texture, you know, to manifest emotions through objects. And I thought, you know, interior design was something that could translate quite well into this.
And where did you go to start? Because you started training then as an interior designer. Where was that at?
Yeah, well, I did a foundation degree in Paris. So it was quite funny. I went to all these castings around the city with a huge, huge folder under my arms, like an A1 folder, because anytime I had a little break, I went to the Louvre or I went to the Musée d'Orsay and I started sketching. You know, I loved drawing, and in my mind, I was getting ready for my studies. So I started a foundation degree while I was still in Paris, but that was more of a generic foundation degree that, you know, after that you can see if you want to do photography or fashion or interior design. And then after that, I started a long distance program with Rodac that was specifically for interiors. And you know, in 2006, I had enough and I thought, okay, I can't prolong it any longer. I have to enroll to a full-time degree. And that was in London Metropolitan.
Okay. Wow. So at that point, did you give up the modeling then and study full-time?
No, I still tried to do modeling. You know, that was my main income. That was me, you know, trying to fund my degree and, you know, my rent, my everyday expenses. And I kept going for a little longer, although it was a bit rocky. You know, I couldn't go to all the castings I was asked to do. I couldn't do all the job I was booked for. And then, you know, when I finished my degree and I started working, I was already at Tom Dixon as an intern when I got a phone call from my amazing booker and from Models One that, unfortunately, time is up. they're, you know, their patience is over. You know, me not turning up to castings or being able to do the work I meant to do means that I have to choose. And obviously my future was in interiors. So that was a scary phone call, you know. At the time, I still didn't make any money from interiors. I was just an intern. And at the time, there was no rules about, you know, being paid even the minimum wage for interns. So all I had was my travel expenses and some kind of lunch allowance, which was basically nothing. So yeah, it was pretty scary at the time, but obviously that had to come to an end. And I guess it was very good for me as well, because I couldn't rely on that plan B anymore.
You say you worked with Tom Dixon. Now, Tom Dixon's famous for lots of iconic lights, and, you know, I love his, like, the glass blown glass kind of bubble kind of light and thing. What was your experience of working with Tom Dixon? What department did you work in?
So the way I met Tom is that while I was still at uni, I enrolled into a competition, an interior design competition. And it was Britain's Best Emerging Interior Designer Award. And the reason why it wasn't part of our curriculum is because it was residential design and we were studying commercial first and foremost. I won that award, and he was one of the judges. So as part of my win, I got an exhibition stand at 100% the year after, where I could exhibit my work and I could represent myself. And he came over and said hi, and that's how we met for the first time. And so we stayed in touch. I'm from Hungary originally, and he came to Budapest a few times because he had some work lined up over there. And I stayed in touch as well because, you know, I was such a huge fan. And one day when I went to visit his studio, he kind of offered me an internship, and that was just an amazing opportunity. So I grabbed that, and I was working in their interior design department, which was a design research studio. But it was still a very small office. You know, we were a small team, so we were sitting next to the product development team. So, you know, I could snoop over, and I really enjoyed being part of such a creative studio where, you know, things were so integrated and the knowledge shared at all times. So I've learned a lot, not just about interiors, but about product as well, and about his way of thinking, which is extremely, extremely inspiring, very conceptual. Very out of the box. So, and I'm still to this day, I consider him a great mentor and a good friend.
Mm-hmm. His work is amazing. And but so that being one of your first studio placements, as it were, how long were you there for? Where did you go after that?
Well, I was there for over a year. I was first an intern, and then I worked for him directly, because he had some projects on his own, and he had his own water tower that he was converting to a dwelling house. So I was working on that.
Wow, your water tower. That was exciting. That's a nice
one. Exciting. And, you know, I was the project manager. I was, the interior designer. I was doing everything you can to assist him in this project. And after that, I went and worked for Martin Brudnicki.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. How was that? How long were you there with Martin?
With Martin, I was there for nearly 2 years. It was an amazing, amazing opportunity. I went and started working there as an associate designer. An associate designer is a team lead of FFNE designers. And the FFNE designers at Martin Brudnicki are responsible for all things creative. So we come up with the concepts, obviously very closely working together with Martin. We select all the materials, hard, soft finishes. And often we also designed products. So bespoke furniture and lighting. You know, Martin is very detail oriented. So every single detail had to be perfect. And often that meant that we had to design them ourselves.
He's known for being a tough cookie, is Martin. How was he to work with then for those 2 years?
Well, he kept his distance. There's an anecdote that when I went and first interviewed, there was this huge meeting room just in front of the reception, and the walls are glass. I was sitting opposite, so I couldn't see him. And he walked past, and he could see that, you know, two guys, two associates were interviewing a young girl, and he was showing them, "No, you can't hire her." But I guess it was a joke. And then, you know, they called me back, and I met him for the second interview. And, you know, he asked some tricky questions. And then even after hiring me, I think for 6 months, I was being tested. But that's absolutely normal. And after that, he was just an amazing, amazing mentor. And I learned so much from him.
It's having that pushback. I know a lot of business people or mentors, you know, sometimes they're a bit cruel to be kind, but you think if you can get through, it's a hard industry. And if you can have someone who supports you, but also pushes you to the limit sometime, then it means that you can do anything, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, he was very generous with his advice. And, you know, he was there to teach us, and he was there for us to learn. So, you know, he shared all his knowledge, and, you know, I guess it's never ending. You can't learn all his tricks, but it was absolutely crucial for me to move forward.
Yeah, we talk about this on the Interior Design Masters, like the contestants who go through that show, at the end of it, they go, well, anything that life throws at me now, I can do, because I've kind of, with a week's notice, I've turned these things around. So having that thing...
You're traumatized enough.
Totally traumatized. But from there, wasn't that your last job before going on to working at Soho House?
No. So at the time I was there, at Martin, I was working on all my dream projects. You know, we worked for Soho House as well as for the Creperies Holdings. We did amazing restaurants for Jamie Oliver at the time. And we started working for the Morgan's Hotel Group, which was one of my, you know, biggest idols at the time. But, you know, with my personal life as well, I just got into circumstance that I had to move. Me and then boyfriend, now husband, decided to move to Sydney, to the other side of the world. And that meant that I had to resign. Obviously, that was heartbreaking for me. But, you know, sometimes life throws things at you and you just have to adapt. So then we moved to Sydney and I started working for Woods Bagot, which is a huge architectural firm. They are, I think, the sixth largest at the moment. And it was a completely different dynamic. I mean, it was just a huge company and, you know, all the processes, the structures, the projects were just at different scale. And I ended up working there for 2.5 years during the whole duration while we were in Australia.
Because I looked up then, they're kind of, the architecture they do is like Olympic style, big, like industrial, yeah, building, you know, big spaces. Think, you know, St. Pancras kind of places. When you're involved in something like that, obviously you've come from an interior design side of thing where you're choosing cushions. Were you then choosing like metals and cladding, or were you still the aesthetics internally?
Well, the reason why they hired me and sponsored me is because they recognized the value I could bring to the company with my experience working at Martin Budnitsky and Tom Dixon. So I was working on interiors projects, but on a different scale and with a huge team and worldwide and on a different software. So, you know, almost I had to start from scratch. I remember on my first day, I was sat in front of my computer and I couldn't even draw a line with this software I was meant to work with, and I was quite doubtful of how this is going to work out, and if they're going to find out that I can't use this software, maybe they're going to send me back to Europe. So I was pretty scared, but it was still very, very exciting. And you know, Woods Bagot works very much like one studio, so they have all these amazing softwares that allow you to work real time with the studio in LA and New York and Hong Kong. And, you know, I traveled around and worked all these amazing projects. And at the time, the Sydney studio was the lead on lifestyle sector, which they call lifestyle sector, is everything that has to do with hospitality or residential. And so I got to work on all the projects that Woods Bagot was working on at the time in this sector, which was amazing.
Wow. But then to get the call about, because we have to talk about Soho House, it's been, you know.
Oh, yes, of course, you have to get that.
5 years of life, but, and it's an iconic brand that we all know in the UK and especially in London and obviously all over the place. So having that phone call asking you to interview for that, how was that whole process going for the job for creative director at Soho House?
So when I moved back to London, I worked for Tara Berners, and I was 9 months in when I got an email out of the blue from an ex-colleague of mine at Martin Budnitsky, actually, who I never worked with, but he was design director at Soho House at the time. And he emailed me saying that they're looking for a design director for UK and if I was interested. And it was on my birthday, so that seemed very unreal and also a little bit, you know, suspicious. But I did follow up and it was genuine and I did meet him. And then I went away for this long trip to India for 4 weeks. And during that time, it was always in the back of my mind, but I thought, you know, I probably missed out on this opportunity because I'm in India and they probably need someone quickly. But luckily I got back and the job was still open and still available. So I went and interviewed with the managing director, and after a long interview process, I finally got the job.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing feeling. I was already a member and I've obviously known the brand for years, and you know, scoring a job like this, it felt quite unreal.
Your first day of working at Soho House, how was that?
it was petrifying. I was completely shocked. I remember as if it was yesterday. You know, there are days in your life that you remember for the rest of your life, I think, and this was one of those. The studio was still in Royalty House at the time, which is right in between Dean Street Townhouse and 76 Dean Street, so between two clubs. It was in a basement, and I remember rocking up there. There's no daylight, you know. There are all these people, relatively small team, but everybody sat together, you know, all the graphic designers, the marketing, the PR, and then obviously interiors. And, you know, on my first meeting, they sat me down and they gave me a printout of all the projects that I'm going to be working on. And, yeah, I pretty much had a meltdown. I started panicking, and you know, on that day I left 6 o'clock on the dot without saying goodbye to anyone, and I was aware of how rude that might be, but I just wanted out and I needed some fresh air and reflect on what just happened to me. But you know, you have a good night's sleep, you rock up the next day, and you know, you just take it by the chin. And I had an amazing team, and then design director became like such a good mentor for me. And then, you know, 6 months later, I started out as an UK design director. 6 months later, I was European design director. And then a year later, I was UK, Europe, and Asia. So I guess that was a pretty fast.
But that must be a good tick of approval. It's like, well, I know. You're doing something right.
I must be doing something right, yeah. So, you know, we started growing crazy. At the time when I started, we were about 15. A month ago when I left, we were nearly 100. You know, this was an amazing ride. We had so many projects, so many openings. It's a very dynamic, very inspirational company to work for, and you do feel like you're being part of something bigger than yourself. And also the initiative of, you know, supporting creatives, people like yourself, and being part of that community, and just feels amazing.
You have, you know, a team of over 100. When researching you, you said that when you decide a concept, you evolve, and it's a collaborative discussion, but also that you workshop it. I'm intrigued to know, when you say you workshop an idea, how does that work practically in the office before you implement it?
So we spend very little time in the office. I never had a desk. Probably I had a desk for a month and then I had to give up because we were just growing so fast. We never had enough space. But I didn't really need an office or a desk, because I was always on site. I was always traveling. And the way we workshop ideas is that we go to site, we spray it out, or we tape it out with a masking tape. And often, like for example, when we opened the newly refurbished Greek Street club, we had the whole kitchen mocked up out of MDF. So like a 3D model of the pizza oven, of all the equipment, and we asked the waiters over from the other clubs, and we had them, you know, testing on how, you know, if a person sits in room A, how he's going to get his food, how he's going to get his drink, where are the dirties going, you know, what's the customer journey. So this is how we test every single idea. And, you know, we never got comfortable. You know, every new site meant a new challenge, and we always started from scratch.
That's amazing, just a bit to spend that time. You know, I suppose it's a cheaper way of doing it. You don't want to build big marble or pizza oven. You can't move the pizza oven once you've done it.
Exactly. You can't make it bigger once it's there, or smaller. Yeah.
Wow. And you know, out of your time there, which has been one of your favorites?
Yeah. Oh my God, it's so difficult. It's almost impossible to choose because they are all so different, which was amazing. This was something I was actually, to be honest, quite scared of. If I join a big brand like this, will I just have to produce and reproduce the same idea over and over again? Because obviously they have a very strong aesthetic. But luckily the projects you know, they were all very different, from the geographic location to the architectural details to the historic elements. And because we always work with local craftspeople as well, every single project features different design elements and different color schemes and finishes and all that. So it's, you know, you can't compare, it's not comparing apples to apples. They're all very different. But now, if I had to choose, I probably would choose maybe Amsterdam because of the location and the building itself, the existing building that we moved into. It was such a beautiful building, and we called it the Sleeping Beauty because, you know, we just felt so affectionate about it, and we just wanted to do justice to it, to create an interior that is worthy of that beautiful history and architecture.
Yeah, you also did an old favourite building of mine, the original BBC home, the Halo, the BBC.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've read that you find a lot of your inspiration from films and TV anyway. So when you went into that space, what was the process of designing that space, and what inspired you when you created those beautiful...
That was such a challenging project. So the project consists of two buildings. One is the existing one, the round-shaped donut building, and that's where the gym and spa is, and the guest bedrooms. And then the second building is the newly built building where the clubs are. And, you know, they each represented some sort of challenge, one with the round floor plate, especially with the gym. You know, I stopped counting how many times we had to redesign that space to make it work. And, you know, every time the plan was out and someone walked by, it was always a conversation starter because it does look like a spaceship. And
Star Trek on the bridge.
Absolutely. Yes, it was Star Trek. And the new building was challenging because we'd never done a new build before. And, you know, there's always a historical element that we can draw up on. And, you know, the old buildings have a certain atmosphere that you can recreate. But with the new one, recreating an atmosphere that's never been there, but making it feel like it's always been there, it was quite tricky. And, you know, the biggest compliment I get for that project is even people who used to work in BBC started to get confused because they were like, was this here before? Because it feels so familiar, but it's completely different. And you know, they do get a feeling that, you know, it's genuine in and authentic, and it's something that is fitting with the 60s architecture that's already there.
Yeah.
And the club space, we designed it in a way that it's got a circular, circulation around it, and people feel like it's also a circular floor plate, like the corridors are or the rooms, but it's not. It's a perfect rectangle, which is so difficult to work with. But we managed to pull that off. And I mean, if I could choose two favorites, it would probably be the other one, because every single piece, you know, we worked so hard to create that atmosphere, and we watched so many old BBC shows and looked at so many original photography from how, you know, the original canteens looked like in the BBC. We did a lot of research.
But there's a nice look back to it. Do you know what I mean? Like, even I saw the restaurant, you've got like a Tony Hart gallery wall, which for my generation, Tony Hart, he was the artist. He was the guy that we all watched, and you wanted to send your pictures in so that you'd get it on the wall. And I just thought, that's such a lovely tick, do you know what I mean, to celebrate him and the art.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a lot of catching up to do as well, because I'm not from the UK, so I didn't understand all the references. So I had to spend hours and hours on YouTube to catch up, you know.
I've heard you say as well that an emotional response to a room is better than, you know, just an aesthetic side of it. On a practical side, is there any tips that you can give my listener to how to create that emotional response? What do you do firstly to try and get that out of people when they walk into a room?
Well, you know, it's really hard to give advice without any context. And share tricks and tips, but I guess, you know, lighting is key. Harsh lighting, only ceiling lights, lights that have no dimmers, you know, no matter how beautiful the space is, if the lighting is wrong, it's really hard to get that right. So I would, you know, I think my number one rule would be get the lighting right. Like, have a lot of floor lamps, table lamps, wall lights if you can, and put them on dimmers. And then only use the ceiling light as a decorative element. It's really just a jewel on the crown, but it's not your main light source. Yeah.
Coming from as a northerner in my family, it was always about put the big light on. So the big light is that, it's normally a big bulb, but it's a big light on. It's a northern sketch. And then the rest is, you know, but in our house now, actually, we've got so many low level lamps and, you know, options and dimmers. And I think it's so right. You go to, I've been to weddings where the lighting's just too bright and you're like, just dim them down a little bit.
Creator. Yeah, just dim them down. It's harsh on the eye, but also people look a lot better when the lighting is right, and then, you know, the atmosphere is better. I mean, I know it can be challenging. Like, I live in a rented flat as well, and, you know, sometimes these things come as they are. You can't start and, you know, recreate the whole room. But if you have some sockets, you can always put floor lamps and table lamps in, and that makes a huge difference in the transformation. Yeah. I love your room, by the way. It's so beautiful. It's
dark wall. Yes, we've gone for teal. And then the other side is pink. We've gone booking room pink. We had lots of arguments about
your pink sofa. Do you still have your pink sofa?
No, it's gone. It's the most comfortable thing in the world. So we've got a teal sofa. Lovely. But yeah, that's totally gone. It went this week. Took the banister off to get it in. But my next question was with lockdown. So lockdown has meant that we've lost a lot of the trade shows. So a lot of the places where you would go for inspiration. And I know we say trends don't really matter, but you know, we saw that a lot of people using arches and curves and things, and that became a bit of a flavour that have come through. Do you look to those things to see what's coming through when you're designing, or seeing what's, I hate the word trend, but what's coming around the corner kind of thing? Or has it been quite nice not being told what you should look at the moment?
Yeah, I really don't believe in trends, because I think design should be contextual, and it should be right to the specific space, and it also should be right for the specific brief and the client. And if you have a customer, or, you know, if it's for a restaurant, it needs to work, it needs to function. I do look at, obviously, new projects, and I follow, you know, magazines and blogs, but just for inspiration, just so that if something, you know, catches my eye and it draws, you know, an interesting idea.
You've said as well that you get a lot of your inspiration from fashion magazines, but I imagine because fashion is quite a quick turnover, there are four seasons and instantly you get a colour on the runway and then it moves to the cushions. And we haven't had that either. So, you know, has that proved an issue for you, not seeing that fresh, you know, inspiration from various outlets?
Well, you know, I must say that the lockdown has made it really difficult to get inspired. I really miss the fashion shows. I miss being, you know, able to go to lots of galleries and see exhibitions. I miss going to the cinema and having that cinematic experience. So really, I have to just work with what I've got. And that's, you know, movies on my laptop and magazines, and just spending more time on Instagram, I guess, and Pinterest. But it is difficult because it is absolutely different experiencing art firsthand in a large scale than, you know, through a screen of an iPad or iPhone. So, yeah, I'm just trying to stay inspired and, you know, be patient until this is over. But it is a challenging time.
It is challenging. You've said as well, as a advice for interior designers, you've got to invest in your future, in your downtime. Now, we've had a lot of downtime. What kind of things do you think people should do if they want to work in the interior design industry? How can they invest in this?
No, I think, you know, downtime is precious, and this is probably a once in a lifetime opportunity for us. Hopefully once in a lifetime opportunity. It's given me a great perspective on my future as well, you know, and being able to spend more time with my family. And I think time should be spent on reflecting on what you want to do in the future. This might be slow at the moment because it's difficult to score new projects or a job, but it is a very good time to reassess your goals in life and make a plan how you want to get there. I was never big on planning ahead, but my husband is very organized and comes from a financial background, so he always makes me do these five-year plans. And what's great about them that sometimes you reach them a lot sooner. Sometimes it takes a year to reach that five-year goal, but once you have that in mind, I think even unconsciously you work towards them, and you know, you at least have something in mind, and you figured out what you want to do.
So 5-year plan then. So Soho House was 5 years. You've left there last month. Do you have a new 5-year plan?
I do have a new 5-year plan. Actually, when I made my 5-year plan 2 years before joining Soho House, my 5-year plan was to be a design director somewhere, perhaps in 5 years. And see, that worked out a lot sooner than I thought it would. So my 5-year plan now is, you know, to run my company, to make it successful. I'd like to grow a team. I'm thriving in a team, and I love working with other people as well. And you know, I'm keen to launch my own product range as well. So I would like to tap into different areas and being creative and working with craftspeople and creating beautiful places and beautiful objects.
Wow. And just that your back catalogue of work is just astonishing. So if anybody does look on your website, lindabaronke.com, you can see some of the beautiful work that you've done on there. I'm excited for your 5-year plan. It's my final question for you now. So money's no object. You're obviously in rented accommodation, but money's no object. I want you to describe to me your perfect room and also what you're drinking in there.
Okay. So I think my perfect building and perfect room is Villa Necchi in Milan. I don't know if you've ever been, but it's in the heart of Milan. And the architect was Piero Portaluppi. And this villa was built in the 1930s. And it's just perfection itself. Every single element of that space, and the gardens and the furniture and the lighting and the ceilings and even the back of house areas, the kitchens, were designed by this one architect. And it's such an elegant, cohesive, beautiful project. And every time I go to Milan, because of Salona or because we have a Soho House there, so I needed to go and visit a few times, I always try to escape to this place. It's my safe haven, and also it provides me with so much inspiration. So if I could travel there, but also back in time when this just opened, and perhaps being part of a party there, I can just imagine it would have been so glamorous. And I would probably drink some sort of Italian cocktail, like something with Italicus.
what I love is you're one of the most successful interior designers, and you've literally just gone, do you know what? I don't want to do it myself. I'm going to just be in his. Don't make me work.
No. This is about me having fun and enjoy myself. You know, actually, this is a very good point. I can never enjoy myself in the spaces I designed. Going back there a few months later, I only enjoy them on the day they open, you know, when every cushion is where I imagine them to be, like all the lights on the perfect dimmer. And once a project starts living and, you know, people rearranging it, I can't go back there anymore and have a good time, because I'm such a control freak. I want to, you know, rearrange all the cushions and rearrange the chairs. And
as you
and
leave
the general manager is just running after me and is like, who's this crazy lady moving all the furniture around?
But I love you. You've left Soho House. You're like, you can keep your membership. I don't want to go back there now because you've moved everything.
You're stressing me out.
Oh, Linda Baronke, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for coming on the TV Carpenter podcast.
It was so lovely to speak to you. Thank you so much for having me.
What I love about doing this podcast is you get to see people's journeys and realize that, you know, life starts off in one way and it totally could go in a total different direction. And she's proved that, has Linda. And what an amazing talent she is. One thing that I really did love and my wife was absolutely giddy about was not the potential membership to Soho House. Well, she didn't work there anymore, so that's not going to happen. But she liked the colour of our lounge. My wife chose that colour. She's like, yay, she liked the teal. So, Linda, you've made my wife and myself very happy, the fact that you liked our wall colour. But, yeah, wasn't she brilliant? And what a talent. And if I didn't get to mention about her social media handles. So if you can go to lindabaronke.com is her website. But then you can also go to Linda Baronke on Instagram. And she has the most beautiful imagery on there. So give her a follow and check her out. I hope you enjoyed that interview. And don't forget, there's the competition. You can go to thorndown.co.uk. If you want 15% off, you just put in the code TV Carpenter when you do your purchase. But you can win some free paint. So tomorrow, Saturday, whenever you listen to this podcast, at 10 o'clock, there'll be a video on my Instagram grid. And you can try and work it out. And I want as many oohs and ahs, and I want as much animation as there was in the Christian Hull's sound bite clip. And just put the name below of what paint colour you think it is. There's a little bit of a clue. The clue is a wise herb that's been around for a while. That might give you a clue for the name. But just put it in there, and then at random we will pick one winner and you'll get a voucher for some free Thorn Down paint. I always say as well at the end, if you get a chance, could you go on to iTunes and leave a review or 5-star review? That was always lovely, or a comment. And it was really interesting. I received the most beautifully timed email this week. You know, when you have one of those days where I had lots going on, had some really important meetings, some possible TV stuff, and I had a bit of a wobble. You know, you're like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And then I received an email just as I was about to make a phone call, a quite important phone call, from a lovely lady called Rebecca Alexander, who's got, I looked on Instagram, she's got a beautiful interior design practice called Thistle and Wild. And she just said how much she loves this podcast. And she travels between Manchester and Scotland, and just thought that time while she's driving, listening to the podcast, she got a lot out of it. And she just loved the whole thing. But because she listens on Spotify, there was nowhere to do a review. So can I just say thank you, Rebecca. It perfectly timed and landed just when I needed it to. So thank you. I'm not doing this to fish for compliments, but notice sometimes in life someone just drops a message just right when you need it. And Rebecca Alexander from Thistle and Wild did that. So thank you. If you want to leave me a message, just tell me what you think. If you've got any ideas for guests, or like I said before, if you want to be a guest on this podcast, I'm still haven't quite decided who's going to be my special guest. I've got one spot available. And if you think you'd like to be interviewed on the podcast and you've got an interesting story to tell, or an interesting product that you've created and you think my listener would enjoy it, then get in touch, contact me at thetvcarpenter.com. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And as always, all I have to do is say thank you for listening to me, Wayne Perry, on the TV Carpenter podcast.